We've been working our way through the Ten Commandments, and we have got to the Eighth Commandment, which you'll find in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 15. You shall not steal. We have been considering all through whether or not the Ten Commandments are still in force today, whether they still apply. And we have seen thus far that all the Ten Commandments, with the exception of the fourth, are still in force. And we will look again today to see whether this one is still in force in the New Testament, remembering that the whole background of the Ten Commandments is that the Ten Commandments form the covenant that God made with the people of Israel. And the fourth commandment was the sign of the covenant that God made with Israel. But that covenant has now come to an end. And so the question that has to be asked is, do the laws of the covenant continue or not? And that's why we have seen that it's only the sign of that now ceased covenant has not continued into the New Testament. Only the fourth commandment has gone, and that's why we don't regard Saturday as a special day. We don't forbid any kind of work to be done on a Saturday. It's because it was part of the covenant with Israel. It's not part of the new covenant. So we're looking today at the eighth commandment, you shall not steal. I expect most of you have never heard of a Frenchman by the name of Pierre-Joseph Proudhon. That's Proudhon, should you wish to go and look him up. He wrote a book in 1840, and he was a French philosopher, and he is reckoned to be the first anarchist. If you've heard of anarchism, he is usually credited with being its founder. That doesn't mean that all examples of anarchy flow from him. Anarchy is where there is no law, but anarchism as a movement has a particular viewpoint. Anyway, in this book, which he wrote concerning property, he made the statement that property is theft. Now, whatever he meant by that, and I think, to be fair to him, it has sometimes been misunderstood what he actually meant, but it has been used down through the years since then as a slogan for certain political views, and so you have, for example, socialism stroke communism, believes in the redistribution of wealth. Robin Hood had the right idea. You steal from the rich and give to the poor. Property is theft. How dare you have something when someone else doesn't? How dare those who have pots of money have big houses when the rest of us can barely afford to live in a garden shed? And you think that's a joke. In the late 80s, a broom cupboard, I mean a broom cupboard, in the City of London sold for, I think it was £36,000. Even now, most of us would find it difficult to find £36,000 to buy a house, let alone a broom cupboard. And so the attitude of some is, it's unfair that some have lots of money, lots of property, lots of possessions, and others, most of the rest of us, don't. This is unfair, so we should take it away from those who have got lots and give it to those who have got nothing. This is a very common cry that you hear, and redistribution of wealth is thought to be a good thing. And this goes along with the slogan, property is theft. People have the attitude that everything should be fair, we should be egalitarian, so everybody should be equal, And I look around and I think, I'm 6 foot tall. Not everybody here is 6 foot tall. That's not fair. I used to have blonde hair. It's not fair I haven't got blonde hair anymore, because everybody knows that blonde is the hair colour that you really want to have. It's not fair that my beard isn't blonde anymore. It's not fair that some people have hair on their heads at all, and some don't. It's not fair that I've never scored a goal at Wembley. I have been on the pitch at Wembley, but I've never scored a goal at Wembley, sadly. It's not fair that I am not as good at football as Premiership footballers. That's not fair. We should all be equal. Perhaps we should draw lots and decide who plays for England on Tuesday night. Wouldn't that be a good idea? That would be fair. You see the absurd situation you get into when you start saying that it's not fair that some have some things and others don't. But that's the attitude of some, that it's not fair and God ought to have given me that which I don't currently have. One thing that you learn from this commandment is that the whole philosophy that property is theft and it should be taken away from those who have it and given to those who haven't is nonsense. The eighth commandment demonstrates to us that in the sight of God, those who have property have a right to that property, and it is wrong to take property away from people. So the eighth commandment assumes that there is such a thing as the right to private property. You remember when we were going through Acts and we looked in chapter 5 at these two persons, Ananias and Sapphira, and they died. God took their lives. Why did that happen? A man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property. Did they die because they owned property? Did they die because they received money for selling the property? No. With his wife's knowledge, he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back for yourself part of the proceeds of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? Peter is saying, New Testament, Peter is saying, you have a right to the property that you owned. Did it not remain your own, and after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? You have the proceeds from the sale. Why is it you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. His lie was, I sold it for this much, and I've given that full amount to the church. But he hadn't. He'd made more than that, and he kept back some, but he was seeking the praise of men. He was seeking to deceive people into thinking better of him than they should have done. It was not the fact he owned property that was his sin. It was the fact he deceived the church as to how much he had made from the sale of that property. Now again, back in the eighth commandment, you shall not steal. It's impossible to steal from someone if they don't have a right to have that property. And we could, in passing, ask the question, how have people acquired their property? Now, down through not just the generations, but the centuries, you can see how much property and possessions have been obtained in a dishonest fashion, that things have been stolen. We could go back to 1066 and see how the whole land of England was stolen by the Norman man, William, and his supporters, the land was stolen by force, and the indigenous population were effectively enslaved. And you find at the time of the civil wars in the 17th century, there was still reference to the Norman yoke that had been put around the necks of the English by the invading Normans. But you could go back before the Normans and say, yes, but the Anglo-Saxons invaded in the 6th, 7th centuries. And you could argue that they took possession of land that was not their own. And you could go back before that and you could say, but then the Romans invaded. And the Romans took land from the indigenous population, the Celts who were here then, the ancient Britons. And you could go back before that, and who knows who was here before the ancient Britons were. But they would have taken the land from them, and so on, until you get to the point where no one was living here, and so anybody could come in and take over. So down through the centuries, property has been purloined, has been stolen from those it had previously belonged to. And that's partly how we've got to the situation today. But to what degree do you then say that those who currently own land should be dispossessed of it because their great back umpteen generations stole it from someone else? That's a bit of a problem. And I'm not suggesting that I'm going to give you the answer how to deal with that. I'm just saying it's an issue. So much property, much land, is today a result of theft in the past. But generally speaking, land, property, should only come into a person's possession as a result of inheritance or honest labour. I'll refer you to Leviticus chapter 20, which speaks about inheritance. God has given the land of Canaan to the people of Israel as an inheritance. God was dispossessing the Canaanites because of their gross wickedness, their gross immorality, and God wanted to wipe the Canaanites off the face of the earth, and he gave as an inheritance the land to the Israelites. And there's an interesting passage about the daughters of Zelophehad, because inheritance went through the male line. What happens when Zelophehad had no sons? Was he and his family going to lose all their land? And so special arrangements were made for inheritance to be passed on. We read in Ephesians chapter 1 concerning the inheritance of believers, the inheritance of everlasting glory, what we are looking forward to in the eternal state. And we read in the passage that we read earlier in Ephesians 4 verse 28 about the thief who should no longer steal but should work with his hands and earn in order that he can give, in order that he can gain possessions, property, money, wealth, so that it can be passed on to others. So there is nothing wrong with the ownership of things. There is nothing wrong with the ownership of property. There is nothing wrong with having money. You never ever find that people are castigated in the scriptures for their for having wealth. They are castigated for their use of wealth, but they are not castigated for wealth itself. But having shown that the scriptures allow for ownership of property, when we speak about you shall not steal, we are seeing that this has to do with depriving someone of property which is legitimately theirs. So you take money or possessions, and we'll see there are other things, that are removed from those who rightfully own it for your own benefit. And this completely ignores the often great trauma that comes to those who have had property stolen. Go and speak to people that have had their houses burgled, and it can be extremely traumatic, especially when items are stolen that are of sentimental value. But they're totally devastated by what's happened, that it's almost as if they've been beaten around the head. Indeed, some people do get beaten around the head when they're mugged on the streets and they have their possessions, their property, removed from them by force. Some people even die as a consequence. But when we think about stealing, we tend to think merely in terms of taking money or taking possessions. But there are other ways in which people can steal, which is not quite so obvious. Fraud and extortion are forms of theft. You are acquiring that which is not legitimate for you to have by deceptive means or by force. You can steal by using dishonest weights and measures. There was controversy many years ago concerning a pint of beer and whether or not people were being given short measures. Did the froth on the top count as part of the pint, or didn't it? And you would find there were some pubs you went into where they might have a mark on the glass saying that's the pint level, but the barman would only fill it up so that the top of the froth met that line. But if you took all of the air out of the froth, actually it wouldn't be air, it would be carbon dioxide out of the froth, then you would find that it was about a quarter of an inch lower than the level. There was great debate about this, and eventually it was decreed by government that the froth did not constitute part of the liquid measure. But you can defraud people as a result of misusing measures. You'll find there's a reference in Proverbs chapter 11 about dishonest weights and measures. And you find repeatedly through the Old Testament there is talk of the use of honest weights. What do you find if you go along and you buy a pound of apples? You would find it difficult these days. You're not allowed to sell in pounds and ounces. It has to be in kilograms or grams. When I worked in a greengrocer's shop, there used to be the occasional awkward customer who would ask for a quarter of mushrooms, that's a quarter of a pound of mushrooms, and it usually happened about once a week. A customer would say, "Ah, but don't forget the weight of the bag, the paper bag." And they'd insist that you first weighed the paper bag. So you put the bag in and you'd say, "Well, that weighs about 0.00000001 of an ounce." Paper bags don't weigh a lot. But they seem to think that a paper bag was quite heavy. They wanted their full amount. But there are some people who would use dishonest weights. And that's what you read about in the Old Testament very often. And when you are using a balance or scales, we tend not to see these things these days, the trader would have a set of weights, but they had shaved a little bit off each of the weights. And so he would take his pound weight and put it on one side of the balance and put the goods on the other side of the balance. And when they were balanced, you knew you had a pound. But if his weight was not a pound, suppose he'd taken off a tenth of the weight, hollowed it out inside, looked to be a pound weight, but in fact was 9/10 of a pound, you were paying for a pound of goods, but you were only getting 9/10 of a pound of goods. So you were overpaying. That's dishonest. That's theft. That was stealing. Or you might find that the trader is very crafty and he has a little lever. underneath, hidden away, you can't see it, but every time something is put on the balance, he presses this little lever, and what happens? Well, the weight of his thumb on the lever adds to the weight of what's being measured, and so you're losing, again, a small amount, which means he gets more money than he is due for what he is selling. That's dishonest, that's theft, that's stealing. So dishonest weights and measures are a form of stealing. You also find the Bible speaks about usury. Usury is overinflated rates of interest. I don't know how many of you have ever purchased items from certain electrical retailers, but they very often will advertise there and say, you can take this item away without paying anything, and you put it onto our store card, and you can pay it off over the next year, 3 years, 5 years, depending on how much it is. And in the small print at the bottom, it says the APR, the annual percentage rate, is 33%. And you think, what? I wonder how many people actually read the small print and realise that that's what they're paying. Every year, a third of what they owe gets added to the bill. And so you end up paying a lot more for it. It can come to up to twice as much as a result of paying this enormous rate of interest. Those of you that watch the television might have seen some adverts for a company. They will lend you money. It's usually small sums of money, to just see you through to the end of the month, until payday, and then you pay it off. Read the small print at the bottom. It tells you what their annual percentage rate is. Now, I haven't checked precisely, but it is something of the order of 2,000% annual percentage rate. Now, they would say, but we're not charging that for a whole year. It's only for probably a week or two. But the annual percentage rate is over 2,000%. That would be condemned by the scriptures as usury, overinflated interest rates. Now, there is nothing wrong with the charging of interest. What does interest mean? Well, you lend someone some money, and until it is paid back, you have an interest in that money, and the person who it has been lent to can use that money to make more money. And so, therefore, it's only fair that you get a share of that extra money that is earned, and that is called interest. And interest rates at the moment are on the floor. We were discussing yesterday about the assets of the chapel and the Sunday school, which are invested, and on which we get interest. And at the moment, we're probably getting something in the region of 2%, if we're lucky. More like one, but on a good day, 2%. It's not a lot. I mean, it's great if you owe money. It's great if you have a mortgage and you're paying 1.5% interest, which means that instead of paying an enormous sum, and of that enormous sum that you're paying every month, about tuppence is actually going off the sum you owe, it means that most of that is going to pay off what you owe, which is lovely. I mean, some of us remember when interest rates were 15%. And we just can't understand why people are complaining today that they can't afford to pay a mortgage because of the high interest rates. And some of them now are even as high as 5%. That would have been bliss back in 1980. But that's by the by. Over excessive rates of interest are usury. You are making more out of a person who needs to borrow than is justified. And so usury is theft. But you will read in Matthew 25 about the parable of the talents. And remember that the talent was a unit of money. People read the parable of the talents and they think, oh, it's talking about whether you can sing, about whether you're good at woodwork and metalwork, about whether you have some skill or other. That's not what Jesus is talking about, although that is an application that comes out of the parable. He's talking about money. So instead of the word talents, read pounds or dollars or whatever unit of currency you fancy. And Jesus is saying that a sum of money was given to three people. And the first two went and they traded and they made more money. But the third one went and buried it. And he was told off because at the very least he could have given it to the bankers and earned some interest. And Jesus doesn't say, and that would have been immoral, that would have been wrong. It is not wrong to charge interest. It is wrong to charge too much interest. It's an important point. So there are various ways in which people can steal, and usury is one of them. But here's another way in which people can steal. If I was to ask you what you would do if you were walking down the road and you saw a £25 note lying on the pavement, what would you do? And you'd say, that's probably worth as much as those £1 million notes you give to taxi drivers when you go to London. And if you don't believe me, and if you haven't seen them before, there we have a £1 million note with a genuine picture of Charles Haddon Spurgeon on the front. And anyone that wants one can have one of those afterwards. And you think the same about a £25 note. All right, so £20 note lying on the ground. What do you do? Do you think, oh, this makes my day. Now what can I go and buy with this? Well, if you pick it up thinking that, you are guilty of theft. You are guilty of stealing by finding. Oh, but finders, keepers, losers, weepers, it is said. But it's theft. Did someone walk down the pavement and think, I've got this £20 note, I'm going to drop it so that someone can find it and it will do them some good? Probably not. Now, you do read about people who do that sort of thing, that they become so immensely wealthy, they decide to go and give it to some down-and-outs, and so they they put on some old clothes and they walk down the streets, and when they see someone lying in the gutter holding a cheap bottle of sherry in their hands, and they're clearly absolutely completely plastered out of their minds, and they give them some money to help them out, to go and buy some more cheap wine so they can get even more drunk in the ensuing days. It's not such a good idea to give people like that money. I used to bump into some people like that when I was at college, and because I saw them so often, I got into the habit of making sandwiches and taking the sandwiches with me. And so then they said, can you spare 10p for a cup of coffee? 10p in those days, it would be a lot more now. I'd say, sorry, no, but you can have a sandwich, which is what they really needed. I remember someone stopping me at Waterloo. I was going shopping, and they said, can you give me some sum of money for a cup of tea? I said, yes, certainly, come with me. I'll go and buy you a cup of tea. And when we got into the queue to buy the cup of tea, he decided he didn't want a cup of tea. And off he went. Last time this happened to me was, I think, a couple of years ago in London. I was carrying a box of books, taking them to the Congregational Library. And someone said, I've lost my train ticket, I've got no spare cash, and I've got no credit cards. How am I going to get home to Berkhamsted? I said, what time's the train? He said, oh, the train is in about 40 minutes. I said, fine, I'll take these books to the library, then I'll walk with you to Euston Station, not far away, and I'll buy you a ticket. And so he followed me around for about half an hour and then decided, no, I've got to go and get the train, because he realised I really meant it. I was going to go with him to buy the ticket. No, just give me the money. I said, no, I'll come with you. But the train's due. It wasn't due. The train wasn't due for another half an hour. He didn't want the ticket at all. It was a con. But there is this, that would be fraud. But finders keepers, you're still depriving the owner of their possession. Now the problem comes when you can't trace the owner. I have a knife that I found in the kitchen of my hall of residence in 1973. I haven't a clue who it belonged to. I tried to find out and I couldn't discover whose it was. So I still have it because I tried, and in the end I had to give up. So you make an effort, if you find something, to discover who the owner is. You can't always achieve it. What you're supposed to do is, if you find something like that, you go to the police station, you hand it in, and if after 3 months no one has claimed it, then legally it is yours. But until that happens, no, you can't keep it. You're depriving the owner of possession of it. It's also theft if you collude with someone who has stolen. And so you find in, we won't actually look at it, but you can look it up afterwards, in Proverbs 29 verse 5, speaks about the receiving of stolen property, that you are guilty of the theft along with the person that's stolen it. You're colluding with them. But not only are these more obvious methods of theft, there is also deceptive advertising. Now, this morning, I sprayed myself with a certain brand of deodorant. Now, I don't know where they're hiding, but there should be at least 100 gorgeous young women flocking around me because I used that particular brand of deodorant. Where are they? How many adverts have you seen in print, on the television, posters, saying that if only you bought this product, if only you used this service, then all your problems would be solved? There is currently sponsorship of some programs on one of the channels, maybe more than one of the channels, for a certain directory inquiries number. And it's all very silly, and it's supposed to be silly, but they're making out that if you discover a time bomb, they will come and defuse it for you. Well, of course, they won't. It's silly. But strictly speaking, that's deceptive advertising. Thankfully, these days, it is illegal to advertise tobacco products. But it was always very deceptive in the past. That if only you smoked this particular brand, then you would be one of the in crowd. They never told you the truth. Smoke this brand of tobacco, you'll have bad breath. Smoke this brand of tobacco, you'll get emphysema. Smoke this brand of tobacco, and your clothes will stink. No one will want to come near you. They never put that in the advertising. Why not? Deceptive advertising. We go back to the fifth commandment when we consider what Jesus speaks about to the Pharisees in Mark chapter 7 about the person who says to his parents, I'm not going to give you anything because all that would have come to you from me, I have given to Corban. I have dedicated to God, so you're not going to get a penny. They're stealing from their parents. And once again, we see the interconnected nature of the commandments that you can steal from your parents, whom you should honour by providing for in their old age. You find all sorts of justifications for taking property or money. There are some crimes that are called victimless crimes. Someone decides, I'm not going to go without the things I would like. I'm not going to buy the cheap brands. I'm not going to eat less. I'm not going to forego having a car or whatever. They steal. They go into a supermarket and they, in some way or other, they take things. One well-known method of doing this is for a woman to put about her person a wicker framework or something similar so that it appears she's pregnant. But it's just empty space, and she goes round, no one's looking, takes something and drops it into the basket and is able to get away with it because people assume that the woman is pregnant. There are other ways that people do this, and they deceive shops. But it's a victimless crime. Sainsbury's, Tesco's, they make millions. That wasn't it last year or the year before. Tesco announced profits of over £1 billion. Well, they can afford it. It's a victimless crime. No, it isn't. Don't know if you've ever seen the Ealing comedy film, The Lavender Hill Mob. Very entertaining film. The Lavender Hill Mob, led by a character played by Alec Guinness, steal this money and they hide out in this house near King's Cross Station. So the police are running around all over the place trying to find them, but there they are, and they're pretending to be a string quartet. One of them is a character called One Round, former boxer, got his name because he'd never get beyond the first round, he'd knock out his opponents. He was a bit din. But they pretended to be a string quartet. Might have been a quintet, I can't remember. And so they go into the room and they would put the music on and pretend it was them playing, and of course it wasn't. And this was their hideout while the heat died down from the police, and then they could just walk away. The landlady discovered what was going on, and the Alec Guinness character explained to her, well, madam, it's like this. The bank that we stole the money from will make a claim from the insurance company. Everybody's insurance policy, their premium goes up by a penny. That's all, a penny. And what is a penny to anybody? And so, therefore, it's a victimless crime. No, it's not. You're stealing a penny from all the policyholders. Might be a large number of them, but you've stolen from them and taken for yourself what it is not justifiable for you to do. And it's the same with Tesco's, with Sainsbury's, shoplifting. The shops have to charge the rest of us more to take account for the millions of pounds worth of goods that are stolen by shoplifters. Every year, I have to pay my car insurance. My car insurance is higher than it would otherwise be because there are some people who say, I can't afford to pay my car insurance. So I'm not going to have any car insurance. So I'm going to drive around without it. And when there's an accident, then someone has to pay for the repairs. Someone has to pay for the long-term care for those who become disabled as a consequence of car accidents. If the car that has caused the accident is uninsured, who pays? Well, it's all the rest of us. Our premiums go up as a consequence. There are no such things as victimless crimes. The same goes for tax evasion. I'm not talking about tax avoidance. I'm all in favour of tax avoidance. That's legal. If you can find a way legally of not paying tax, go for it. Don't give the government too much money, because otherwise they'll just fritter it away. Make them have to be frugal in the way they conduct their business. But tax evasion, that is not declaring all your income for tax purposes, that is wrong, that is theft. Jesus said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. Romans chapter 13 speaks about paying taxes to the state. That is right and proper. But to evade tax is illegal, and it is stealing, and as a consequence of evasion, the rest of us have to pay more tax. It's also theft, and you are colluding with thieves, when you ask a tradesman to do a job, and he says, well, it will cost you this much, but I'll knock off the VAT if you pay me in cash. What he means is that he's not going to put it through his account, it's just going to go straight into his pocket. And so you don't pay the VAT, he doesn't pass on the VAT, it's a tax, value-added tax, he doesn't pay it on to the government, and so the rest of us are deprived. As a consequence, we have to pay more tax. That's illegal. There are all sorts of ways in which people deprive the rest of us of money. They steal money from us by fraud in the benefit system. And you've doubtless seen adverts where they illustrate this, or you've heard examples where this happens. That there is the man who claims disability benefit because he just can't walk. He's a brilliant centre forward for his local football team, but he can't walk, and so therefore he can't work. And there are real examples of this. Or there's the man who is living on benefits. He's unemployed, but he is getting money from working on the side, but he's just not declaring it. And so the rest of us have to pay more tax. He's stealing, not just from the government, he's stealing from us because we have to pay more as a consequence. Slavery is a form of theft in that you steal someone's liberty and then you force them to work and you don't remunerate them appropriately. You are stealing from them. You are not giving them the benefit of their labour. And the scriptures say, the labourer is worthy of his hire. Now, you can negotiate with someone how much they're going to be paid. In this country, there is a certain minimum that you can pay. And some people get paid benefits because they're considered not to be paid enough. So, to a degree, you can be a thief by not paying someone enough. And there are examples. It tends to happen with immigrant workers, but not exclusively, that they are brought into the country to do fairly menial jobs, and they are given free housing, but of course they have to pay for it, and so they get paid less. And it becomes virtual slavery, and money is stolen from them, and we have to pay benefits to them, and so that's coming out of our pockets, that's theft. It could be argued that gambling, and that doesn't just mean the horses, but also the lottery, it's not just a tax on stupidity, because people think, but if I won the jackpot, the odds are 14 million to one of winning the lottery jackpot. I was talking to someone yesterday, and they said, I've just won on the lottery. Yes, how much? I forget the exact amount, but it was a very small amount. I think it was £7. Wow. And how much has she spent on the lottery just in the last year, let alone in the last 15 years since it started? Would have been much better off if they'd have put it into the bank, and even at today's appallingly low interest rates, would have got some money instead of the nothing that she's ended up with. But you could argue that this is a form of theft because it's making It's advertising itself as, you could be a winner, and you're not. And it's just a way of relieving people of their assets. But when we're talking about stealing, we also have to look at the other side of it, at what we have, and not just what we have and what we own, but we can also think about how other things can be stolen from people. Have you ever thought about someone's reputation? Now, the tabloid press really go to town on this, and they love to destroy someone's reputation. And there are occasions on which it's entirely unjustified. One of the Sunday newspapers uses something called the fake shake to deceive people. And some people have been caught out, justifiably, and some people haven't. Some people have gone along with the fake shake or his equivalent because they think, there's something dodgy about this. I wonder what's going on. I'll play along to find out what it is, because this sounds illegal. I'm going to try and gain some information so I can then pass this on to the appropriate authorities. But it's then reported in the newspapers that this person is greedy, this person is a fraud, and sometimes it's not justified. Sometimes they just use innuendo against people, and they're stealing a person's reputation. And it's very easy to ruin someone's reputation with gossip. And the great danger of saying, have you heard about so-and-so? Now, there's one person I will name in this because he has been much maligned, totally unjustifiably, Alan Morrison. Now, Alan Morrison is an interesting character. He is somewhat obsessed with conspiracy theories. I love a good conspiracy theory. I think Alan goes a bit too far. I wouldn't agree with everything that he says. But there are some people, some evangelical ministers in this country, who have spread abroad the rumour that he has left his wife and abandoned the faith. As far as I can tell, neither of those things are true. But I'm sure if you speak to many people, they will say, oh yes, have you heard about Alan Morrison? How he's left his wife and has abandoned the faith and has become a rock musician? Well, I don't think it's true that Alan's become a rock musician. He has started performing music, and I think it's more folk music than rock music. I'm not sure if he's any good because I haven't listened to any of his music, but there's been this whispering campaign against him. Now, why? Who knows? Very often, it's as a consequence of someone seeing or hearing something, misunderstanding what's going on, and then making a definite statement based upon a misunderstanding. Perhaps they came across his music website and saw that he was in Sweden and he was performing with this woman who's not his wife. Someone's drawn a conclusion which is unjustified. I remember many years ago speaking to a now dead minister. He said, oh, isn't it sad about so-and-so that they become charismatic? I said, really? I spoke at his young people's group last week. I never got that impression. So I mentioned it to so-and-so, and they phoned this minister and said, no, it's not true. If ever you hear a rumour, if ever you hear a piece of gossip, check it out to see if it's true, and don't you dare repeat it until you know it's true. Otherwise, you could be guilty of stealing that person's reputation. Let what you communicate to others to be based upon that which is true, and not gossip. It's possible to steal from your employer. Your employer, assuming you have one, of course. My employer is me. I have the worst employer imaginable. He makes me work all sorts of long hours, and I get almost nothing for it. If only I could take him to an industrial tribunal. Life would be much better, I'm sure. But I have this awful employer. But some people, they steal from their employers because they, as the Americans would say, spend a lot of time round the water cooler. Perhaps we would say spend a lot of time round the photocopier. There was a report a few weeks ago that one council in East Anglia was going to make smokers working for them work longer hours or get paid less because they were taking breaks during the working day to go outside to smoke, while the non-smokers sat at their desks and carried on working. So the non-smokers were more productive. The non-smokers, therefore, should either get paid more or the smokers get paid less. Well, that's fair, because otherwise the smokers are stealing time from their employer. And not only stealing time, but taking the odd pen at home from work. I used to work in the civil service. If you'd ever seen a civil service pen, I think they must have bought several million of these pens in the 60s and thought, oh, this is a good deal. And you'd go through several pens before you found one that worked. Why on earth would you want to take it home? Everything used to be stamped with the words government property, even the toilet paper. But if you'd ever used government toilet paper, you'd think, why on earth would anyone want to take this home? Perhaps it was a deliberate ploy on behalf of the government to make it difficult so people wouldn't want it. But then sometimes people would take things home with them. This can be a form of theft. Adultery. See, we're going back to one of the earlier commandments, the previous one. The seventh commandment. Adultery is a form of theft. You're stealing someone's husband or wife. You're stealing their purity. You're stealing children of a parent. It's a form of theft. Very common these days is theft of someone else's ideas. There is a system called the patent, or the patent, depending on how you wish to pronounce the word, system where ideas can be protected. And when something is patented, you have 25 years in which you can exploit what you have patented. And you have the cartoons where someone has come up with the idea for a better mousetrap. And they're going to make a fortune out of it. Problem comes when someone steals their idea and they happen to have more money and the person who actually came up with the idea can't afford to sue them. And so they lose their idea and all the wealth that could have come through the exploitation of that idea. Plagiarism is a form of theft, which is very common in universities these days when students, instead of studying for themselves, they go to Wikipedia and they just copy and paste straight from Wikipedia into their essays. That's called plagiarism, claiming that someone else's work is your own. And there's copyright theft, stealing someone's, not just claiming for yourself something that someone else is, but even saying, this is theirs, but I'm getting the money for it. I spent several years tracking down the copyright owners of the writings of D.E. Hart Davis because I wanted to reprint his books because they're very helpful. But I knew I couldn't because copyright continues for 70 years after the death of an author. And I knew he was alive in 1944. So I knew that he was still within copyright. I couldn't publish those books till I discovered the copyright owners. And then I bumped into someone who lives in Trevonan. How far away is Trevonan? Less than 10 miles. And it was his granddaughter. And I got permission to publish those two books. But to have done so without permission would have been theft. I would have been stealing. It is possible to rob God. The Jews at the time of Malachi were not paying the tithes, the tenth of their income, that they should have done. And they're accused in Malachi 3:8 of robbing God. But there is a danger that there is an attitude that we can think that if we pay our tenth, the other 9/10 is ours to do with as we wish. But we must remember that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Everything is God's. You belong to God. God owns you. Everything that you can see, God owns. It belongs to Him. Everything you can't see belongs to God. Everything is God's. So we should remember that, okay, we might give a tenth, although that is part of the Mosaic covenant that you must give a tenth. Some people, they shouldn't give a tenth. They should give nothing because they haven't got anything. Some people should give 90 or 95% because they have such an enormous income. We should be good stewards of what God has given to us because it's all God's and we merely hold it on trust. God has been extremely generous to us. God is a generous God. And so God expects us to be generous and not withhold from those, he doesn't expect us to withhold from those in need what we should legitimately give to them. There is a danger of being like the man in Luke chapter 12 who had such an enormous harvest that he said, well, what am I going to do? Well, I'll have to knock down my barns and build bigger ones. And God says, you fool, tonight your soul is required of you. Instead of thinking, I've got more than I need, what can I do for the benefit of others with this? So the question is, are we thieves? And thievery, stealing starts in the heart. Covetousness is the root of stealing. We should not covet, but we should freely give to all as we are able and as they have need. We shouldn't be wasteful, that's bad stewardship. So we should be careful what we buy, that we buy what we need. Otherwise we can be robbing God. And we can be using it to buy things we don't need when we could use the money for other things, supporting the poor, supporting missionary work, all sorts of things. There are those who make there is some merit in taking on enforced poverty. And there is the story about Mahatma Gandhi, who so wished to identify with the poor. One of his backers said, it costs me an awful lot of money to keep Gandhi poor. There is no merit in taking on enforced poverty. It's foolish to think so. Rather, we should give to those who need as we are able. We should pay what is our due to the government and to those around us. And if we are found guilty of thieving, then we should take to heart that verse in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28 where Paul says, let the thief no longer steal. But there's not a full stop there, there's a comma. Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labour, doing honest work with his own hands. A person tends to steal with their hands. There are other ways, but you tend to steal with your hands. So, the devil makes work for idle hands. So instead of using your hands for illegal, immoral activities, use your hands to do honest, moral things. Honest work with his hands, but there's not a full stop there either. So that he may have something to share with anyone in need. It's not just that he works honestly to provide for himself, but provides for himself so that he can share with others. And if you're thinking about the needs of others, you're not thinking, what can I get for myself? And we need to have the same attitude that the Lord Jesus Christ had, who went to the cross and suffered and died for the sake of others. Now, if we look at our hearts and discover that we are thieves, maybe only in our hearts because we are covetous, there is a solution, and that is to repent and believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, that though we may be the greatest of sinners in this regard, yet still God will receive us because of what the Lord Jesus Christ has done. Let us not seek to rob God of the glory that is due to him for what he has done, but rather let us acknowledge we are sinners. God is right, God is glorious, God is great, God is wonderful and loving and merciful and kind, and he has provided for us in this wonderful way in the Lord Jesus Christ, so that we might know him and we might be delivered from our sins and know eternal glory.